is the red light. If you see it go off, then we're in trouble. Okay, this is July 26, 2019 at the Doherty House, and this is Janet Culler interviewing Tom Nuremberg, member of the Historical Society Board. And good morning. So Tom, why don't you start by telling us your birthday and a little about the family that you were born into. I know you're from here.
Okay. I'm Tom Nuremberg, and I was born September 3rd, 1946. My family actually goes back, history of my family. My mom and dad both grew up in Western Washington. My dad in the Seattle area, and my mom in the Renton area. My dad and my grandfather was a bricklayer, and my mom actually was born in Kansas on a dry land wheat farm. The very start of the Dust Bowl, they lost their farm, and so they loaded all of their possessions up on an old car and headed out to Washington. And I suspect that my grandfather probably, the reason he came to Washington, he probably wanted something green and wet as opposed to dry and dusty as in Kansas.
I'm just turning the volume up. You have a soft voice.
So they got to Colorado, and my mom's mom died. And then they continued on. She had, there were seven kids in the family. Continued on to Washington and ended up over by on Union Hill outside of Redmond. And not too long after that, her dad passed away. And so she became an orphan and was went into, even back in the 20s, the state had a foster care program. And so she became a foster child. But in those days, a lot of the people didn't want a child. They wanted a little worker. And on top of that, the state paid them some money. So she, of course, she was too little to handle cattle or hogs or something, but fit right in on the chickens. And most of her childhood then was spent on various chicken farms around the area, particularly down the Auburn-Renton area.
It's really abusive.
Yeah. But early on, my mom discovered books, not only for the knowledge in the book, but also as a means of escape. So during World War II, my dad, who had become a master craftsman painter, he worked in a shipyard painting. Actually, he was such a good painter, he painted the officers' quarters on the ships. And as the war was coming to an end, they lived in West Seattle. They decided they wanted to get out someplace where they had some acreage, could grow a garden, have a few animals.
So she met him in West Seattle?
Yeah, so they happened to come out here to visit my mom's aunt, who lived up on the Mountain View Road, only it was called Cherry Gardens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as they were visiting with her, they, it was mentioned that the house up the road was for sale. And so my mom and dad walked up and looked at it. It was a small house on kind of small acreage, 6 acres. They decided to buy that and move out here. I had, at that time, they had two boys, my brothers, Jerry and Jim. And it was after they moved out here that I was born. So I was actually was born here in the community. My mom then quickly got...
You were first?
No.
Or you were last?
I was last,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had two older brothers.
Okay.
Jerry and Jim.
Mm-hmm.
My mom became very involved and interested in the what's
Civic?
Yeah, the Civic Club. And in those days, the Civic Club was the main supporter of the library. They had sales and things that raised money for books. And the library wasn't connected to the King County system.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my mom then became assistant librarian to Mrs. Bredenberg, who had been librarian since in the very first start of the library.
Can you spell that, Bredenberg?
Well, I'm not sure.
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
Bredenberg.
And then she retired in the very early 50s, and my mom became a librarian. And so my mom was a town librarian through the all through the 50s, the 60s, and well, then halfway through the 70s. My mom was always very interested in getting kids involved in reading and books. And so she did quite a few things at the library to get the kids interested. She started Story Hour and even got the library to be open in the evening so the kids could come down and work on reports and things. In those days, you look things up in the encyclopedia. You didn't have the internet or anything. So she did a number of things to do that. She was with the library when it became part of the King County system. And
yes.
There was quite a bit of opposition in the town of Duval at the time, because people felt they were giving up control of their library. But my mom was in favor of it because it greatly enlarged the amount of books that would be available, you know. And the King County Bookmobile started coming to town. So, and she then became employee of the King County library system at that time. But she was very much in favor of it. My dad, who, as I mentioned, was a painter, a master painter, he thought he could get work out here. And at first, it was pretty tough. All he could do is paint fences and barns and stuff like that. So he then educated himself and became a builder, not only the carpentry trade, but he also taught himself a plumbing business and became a licensed electrician. And so he then, the rest of his life, was a Duval builder. And there wasn't too much new building going on in those days, but there was a lot of remodeling. And he, he could do it all. In fact, he actually did some work here in the Doherty house for the Dohertys. And he was friends with the Dohertys. And, as a little kid, I got to know Joe and Leo.
Joan?
Joe. Joe and Leo.
Joe is in the picture there with Leo.
No, that's the youngest one.
Oh, Vince.
Vince.
Okay.
Vince left the farm and went to Redmond. Joe and Leo, their other brother, their older brother, I can't remember his name, passed away about 1955. And he was one of the three that stayed on the farm. And so it was just Joe and Leo.
Okay.
And my dad actually did some work in the pantry there for him. And I'm not sure which part of the pantry he worked on. These two old bachelors didn't like sharing their food
with each other.
Right. So they wanted, on one side, one had the cupboards, and on the other side, the other had the cupboards. So they wouldn't get their, one wouldn't get into the other one's food.
That's great. And that's how they kept the peace.
Yeah. And my dad then did some work on their milk house and the milking barn that was down there, and he off and on did different things, and he stayed friends with them all the time. And Leo actually went out and worked on some jobs with my dad, helping. And he worked as a common laborer.
And what was your dad's name again?
Howard and Rose. So my dad was actually made a living here in Duval doing various carpentry and remodeling jobs. And one of the advantages for the library system when my mom was a librarian was that they also got a free maintenance man. Because whenever there was something that needed to be repaired or changed, and I can remember my mom saying, "Howard, you need to come down to the library and fix those shelves." Of course, my dad would do it, and he wouldn't charge him anything.
Aww.
And then the one addition to the library, my dad actually was paid to do that, the original addition. Him and another guy. But he really did.
Like bumping out the front porch?
Well, no, it goes towards the park. It goes towards the Grange.
Oh, to the, over there, the side.
And when my dad did it, as you know, as a at-cost project. So, yeah, so I can remember my mom asking him a heck of a time to come down and repair the shelves or put up new shelves or do things like that. And a lot of times he did it on Sunday because the library was closed and he could do whatever needed to be done and nobody'd be in his way.
Where did your family live at that time?
My family?
Mm-hmm.
Well, up, if you go up the Cherry Valley Road, up to what's called the Mountain View Road.
Okay.
And about a mile and a half up there is where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
And my folks' house is still there. Leslie and I own that. And we bought some property from my mom and dad and built a new house on the hill behind it.
Okay.
Now that new house is 45 years old, so not new anymore. One of the things that not too many people know is when we built our house, we wanted to build something that looked like an old farmhouse that fit in country living. So we actually kind of used a Doherty house as...
Okay.
And our house is basically the same shape, except here where the kitchen is longer and it's the living room, and the other side is where the kitchen is. It's quite a bit similar, but kind of the reverse. We used the Doherty house as kind of a pattern. And like I say, it was a new house, but now it's 45 years old. We still own my mom's house, and we rent that out.
And you own the other one?
What's that?
You own the other one?
Yeah, we own both.
And
houses.
You live there?
Yeah.
The other one. Okay.
Yeah. So we actually live on the property I grew up on.
Okay.
Although not in the original house.
But. Wonderful. What was family life for you like growing up?
Well, actually, my older brothers were quite a bit older. One was 10 years older, Jim, and Jerry was 6 years older. So I was the baby of the family. And so I had a pretty...
You were the afterthought.
Yeah. I had it pretty good. My brothers, when I was growing up, they had to do farm chores, milk the cow, and work in the garden.
So they did have animals and
a
big, huge garden.
Raised pigs and calves. And the idea was it was supposed to, you know, raise your own, some of your own food and supplement your income.
Sure.
But so I had it pretty good. I got to play around a lot. And when my mom became a librarian,
mm-hmm.
which I was 5 years old at the time, she would make me come down to the library when the library was open. And I can remember at the time I used to kind of hate it. Didn't want to. But now I look back and I think what a wonderful experience, because Duval that time basically went from one stoplight to the other stoplight. That was Main Street.
That block.
Yeah. And the various business owners, the merchants, almost all of them were World War II veterans. And they had, you know, this was a group of people we call the Great Generation.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that, because they grew up in the Depression.
Yeah.
Most of them had it really tough. And then they went off to fight a war. And then when they came back after the war, they wanted to make the country a better place,
mm-hmm.
not only for themselves, but for their children and for
yeah.
future generations. So I was, because, you know, it wasn't so much traffic stuff. My mom would let me basically go up and down Main Street and I'd visit with different merchants. And a lot of them would tell me stories about the war and things. Some of them were nasty stories, but most of them were funny things that had occurred to them when they were in the Army or the Navy or something. And
this is how you got to be such a good storyteller. You were a good listener as a child. You absorbed.
And I say, I feel really fortunate now that I got to know these guys. So even, you know, they were varied. One was in the Navy, one was in the Army, another one was a pilot. Cliff Hill, he had been a Navy pilot.
From Hill's store.
Yeah. And so I got.
Who were the other ones? I mean, some of the other ones in the other stores. Do you have any of the other names?
What's that?
Who were the other merchants
well,
at that time?
Immediately down from the library was Mr. McDougall. And
yes.
he was actually lived in Monroe and had this store for years and years. He was not a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ironies of his is he had bought the store maybe like in the 30s, but his wife did not want to live in a tiny little town of Duval, so they lived in Monroe. So
I've heard of McDougall's in that building where the bike shop is
right.
now.
Actually,
what was the store? What did they originally sell?
Well, it was a general merchandise store. Yeah.
And Hill's was also.
Right.
But they were different.
Correct.
Yeah.
In the back of McDougall's store, they had frozen lockers that people could rent. And so you take your beef that you butchered and take
you
it
down
there.
Locker.
And put in a,
and you go and pick out
yeah.
your pieces for the week.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a little kid, it used to scare the crud out of me because it had this big insulated door. It was like about a foot.
You thought you'd get locked?
Yeah.
I went in one of those too in Iowa. We used to go every week and yeah, and it is. But it smelled in the good, the fresh frozen meat smell.
Yeah. But that door would clank shut.
Yeah. So you were always good to stay out of prison.
Yeah.
No clanking.
Yeah. And, so then, next to that, the next building was Jones's Hardware. And I'm not sure if he was a veteran. That I don't remember. But then the next building where the Shell station is, there was a big, huge building. It was a gas station and garage repair. And they also sold International Harvest tractors and stuff. Hammond Manalia, and he was a veteran. He'd been in the Navy.
McNalia?
And yes, his son, Bill, has the auto parts. And if he'd be a good one for you to talk to, too, if you ever can get him.
I'm sorry.
And across the street, there was Jim Hunt, the barber. He was an Army veteran. say then. Cliff and Velma Hill. Cliff was a Navy pilot. And then there was the bank. And then the, where was the Duval Coffee House? I think it's part of the bakery now. But Gil Hackenbrook, he had that. And he was also, I believe, a Navy veteran, I believe.
Was Jim Hunt still there when the hippies came in?
Yes.
And the restaurant, the famous one,
was the Silver Spoon.
Moved in and started a little bit. Some of the time was over there sharing his barbershop.
Well, we're kind of jumping ahead here, but
yeah.
In the 1970s, when the hippie movement started, it was part of the, I would say, the anti-Vietnam war movement.
Back to the land.
And so he started in that building. It had been a restaurant building, but then this gal who was, I guess you'd like call him like a hippie gal, opened up the original Silver Spoon.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the barbershop was in one little corner, a front corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was back.
But it was still Jim Hunt?
Right.
Okay. And he didn't like him because they didn't need haircuts. They didn't do haircuts.
But
it was still Jim.
A lot of people don't realize is that back then in the early 70s, you had the hippies and you had the rednecks.
Uh-huh.
But now the connotation of redneck is completely different.
The
redneck was the country, the farm kids who had short hair like I have, and when they worked out in the sun,
they really got sunburned.
So, of course, they were the ones that got the haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't too long, a couple of years maybe, that Jim Hunt then moved across the street.
Okay.
Into Dave Harder built a addition to the building and made a space for the barber shop there.
Okay.
As far as the hippies, there was kind of two different groups of hippies. One was the back to the land, get with nature, make music.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a whole big another group that basically, in my opinion, were from Mercer Island and Bellevue. They came out here to Duval because we had no police department.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, to party.
Yeah. And do drugs and stuff.
And do drugs and stuff. And we had a lot of problem with theft around that time. And also, they would move into, people's like a vacation cabin. They'd go
in a hunting cabin or something,
and move right in. So there was a division of whether the hippies were. I mean, my mom had gas siphoned out of her car right in front of the library when she was in the library.
Wow. Well, we should go back. So you grew up on Cherry Valley, and then you also went to the library quite a bit, and you met all these veterans, and you did lots of listening to stories. Mm-hmm. Was your dad in any of the wars?
No, my dad, like I say, during the war, he was a master painter, and so his job in the shipyards was considered a priority to the war effort, so he was not in the service.
Sure.
Yeah. I myself, then, in the late 60s, joined the Army Reserve. I was in the Army Reserve for 6 years. The 409th Engineers down in Everett.
Okay.
And I was an equipment operator. We went around. And part of the reason I actually joined the reserves was because I didn't want to have to get drafted because I knew I'd go to Vietnam.
Absolutely. Get killed.
So I spent 6 years in the reserves, and we actually went around and did work for various little towns at mm-hmm. building parks and baseball fields and with mm-hmm. our equipment. So it was really kind of a worthwhile situation.
Did either of your parents talk about the Great Depression? And Rose said it was really affected by the Dust Bowl in her family.
Yeah, my mom talked a lot. Some of the families she was with when she was a little girl treated her really well, and some not so well. She was never abused, but like I mentioned, a lot of them wanted a little work or so. When she came home from school, she had to go to work.
Have that kind of relationship with a parent.
Right.
She never had that growing up.
And I remember her telling me she didn't like to get sick and have to stay home from school because they would want her to go out collect eggs or whatever.
Couldn't be sick.
And she didn't enjoy school holidays, most kids do.
She likes school, so no wonder she liked books.
Yeah, right. And like I said, especially besides the knowledge, it was the escape.
She became a good parent, wonderful parent.
But her love for books went over to me. Mm. I still, to this day, I enjoy reading. I read a lot.
What kind of reading the best? Like, do you like history or nonfiction?
I usually don't tell people this, but you know what I really like to read is Western romance novels.
Well, that's your escape.
Yeah. And I really don't have anything to escape from, but I just enjoy.
Yeah. Well, you probably know the genre so well.
I'm also a sucker for Hallmark movies.
Oh, okay. And so I know that you went to school here.
Right. The building across the street, which is the apartment house, was the original Cherry Valley Elementary School. And I went there up to the fifth grade. And then at that time, they built what we used to call the new school, which is actually part of the present school. And the whole school then moved over to there.
In what decade was that?
Well, that would have been middle 50s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in those days, too, actually the school moved itself. The kids, we packed books and desks and stuff from one school to the other school. So then I went here up to the seventh grade. And then when I came to start the eighth grade, they had moved the eighth grade, consolidated it down in Carnation in the bottom of the high school building, which was, in those days, it was called Tolt High School. And the high school was a combination of Duval and Carnation, consolidated. So then I went to 4 years of high school there in Carnation. It was kind of a long bus ride from way up on the Mountain View Road. But, and then after high school, well, something I might mention while we're talking about high school is, in those days, in the early 60s, I recently read that in 1960, from Monroe to Fall City, there were 65 dairy farms.
Okay.
And these are all family-owned farms that people were proud of their farms. They kept them painted and took care of the cows. And it was, some of the places were almost like a Norman Rockwell-type painting.
Yeah.
And then last year, supposedly there was only 5 left out of 65.
The last year of the 60s?
No, last year, 2018.
Oh.
And 2 of those farms are down right by Monroe. And so there's 3 others in this whole stretch of the valley. Duval was when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, was a big dairy farm. community.
Lisa Allen told me about some of the crash of the dairies.
Yeah.
With flooding and then regulation changes.
Yeah, the county imposed a lot of regulations that changed it. And then the other thing, well, before we get too far into that, what I meant to bring up was when I was in high school, if a high school, a teenage boy wanted a summer job, he could get a job with one of the farmers.
Okay.
Some of the jobs were only a couple of weeks, like putting in hay or making silage.
Sure.
But you could get a job with one of these farmers, and these guys taught a teenage boy some good lessons. They taught him work ethic,
uh-huh.
and they taught him how to do repair things, fix things, how to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really was a great education mm-hmm. for teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then...
And you did that.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
Farmed yourself out to
yeah.
work, and right. you were able to make some money, too.
Right.
Wow.
And so at that time, hay was the big thing. Each farmer made their own hay.
Yes.
And there wasn't much hay brought in from Eastern Washington.
And so
at
they
that
grew
time.
Their right. fields of the grasses.
And so then they'd hire a group of teenage boys to put the hay in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, we actually went, a group of us, we'd go from one farm to the next farm to the next farm, putting in. Picking the bales up out of the field and putting them on a trailer and taking them to the barn.
Very strong.
It was good exercise.
You had
yeah.
muscles.
Yeah.
You were impressing the girls.
Well, I don't know about how much muscle, but it was good exercise.
Yes.
You got plenty of fresh air. One of the things that I think was has brought kind of the downfall of dairy farms is besides the floods and the change in regulations and the price of milk went way down, but a big thing was the dairy farmer had to be really devoted to his cows.
Okay.
It was really important. In fact, I know a gal who she grew up with me, and they had a dairy farm down in the valley. She was talking about how the cows came first. They had to.
Mm-hmm.
The cows had to be milked twice a day, once mm-hmm. in the morning, once at night. It didn't matter whether you were sick or it was
right.
Christmas
vacation.
Or it was your birthday.
You never went anywhere.
You had to milk those cows twice a day.
Wow.
And if you had a cow that got sick, you had to take care of it because that was worth a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said her dad a lot of times would miss like school programs and things because he had to be taking care of the cows. Because, and she said it used to kind of bother her when she was a little girl because she felt that dad, the cows were more important than the family was.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that's true, but it had to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the next generation came along, even my generation, we don't have the devotion to the cows. Like
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There were, again, a lot of those farmers mm-hmm. were veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had come immigrated from different countries.
And they grew up in the Depression, and you
right.
don't lose a cow.
Right.
You invest everything.
So that devotion to the cows and the
yeah.
farm.
And
the, yeah, and mm-hmm. and the long hours,
mm-hmm.
the next
sure.
generation just didn't want to be that devoted to them.
Their children
yeah.
didn't
right.
feel the same. They wanted
right.
more of their lives.
See, they were the great generation. We were mm-hmm. the what do they call it? Post-war baby boom, the baby
boomers. So you're
yeah.
a boomer like me.
And, we just... didn't want to have the devotion, didn't see
mm-hmm.
the reason for it. And unfortunately, that has led to all those things that led to the decline of these great dairy farms. I wish I could take you back in the 1950s and take you down the Riverwood and see those farms. And a lot of people down there were Dutch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I heard that.
And they even, some people called it Dutch Monroe.
Uh-huh. And the carnation, too, I heard.
Yeah. But
there's still a name, a Dutch name on one of those.
Well, there's still well, Richensender family is.
Is Dutch. And what's that one on the main road? Deitch or?
Dion?
No.
I don't know. I can't think. But they are
very proud of their farms.
But anyway, if I could take you down the river road, and you could see those farms, how they kept them up, and like I say, kept everything painted, and
beautiful.
The fields in great shape. Yeah. Mowed. You wouldn't see all these thistles and stuff. Like
yeah,
that.
Never.
They kept the weeds down, and the nice fat Holstein cows, the black and white Holstein.
So growing up here, you learned so much from being downtown, learning from the veterans, your mom and dad, and then learning from the farmers that you worked for in the summer as you grew up. Wow. It sounds like it was kind of an idyllic childhood.
Well, in a way, although at that time I didn't see it that way.
Okay. Okay. What did you see it as?
After high school, I went for a year to college in Everett Community mm-hmm. College. But that was a long drive, and I kind of lost interest. And then the whole got into the Army Reserve. And Leslie and I got married in 1969. We've been married for 51 years.
And where did you meet?
But about that time, I think it was 1968, I went to work for a concrete company over in Redmond. It was called Olympian Stone. Mm-hmm. And they made precast concrete panels and put on big buildings. And I went to work there with the idea I had a car, and I was going to work for 2 years and pay that car off. And then I was going to find non-construction type job, because this concrete company was a construction.
You didn't want to do the things that your dad did, the building.
So I figured 2 years at tops.
Mm-hmm.
41 years later, I retired from that company. It had changed its name, but the company had stayed in the original family ownership through three generations. And
this is unheard of nowadays. Nobody starts a job and stays 41 years.
Yeah.
And I certainly. In a business in the family.
I certainly had no intention originally at all. And I liked the construction work, and I liked making things with my hands, you know. And,
okay.
I spent 20 years out in the. As a foreman of the welding shop, and they treated me good. It was
you had all skills.
Yeah, it was a union job, and I had a
Good
retirement and medical.
Yeah.
But one of the best things about it, Janet, was I just had to go over the hill to work. Just
so
open
close.
Up the hill. I didn't even have to go into Redmond.
Yeah.
It was just on this side.
Aww.
And so part of the reason is it was such a great commute.
Yeah.
Because
it made
I did
a huge,
not.
Yeah.
Even back then, I didn't want to have to drive to Seattle.
Yeah.
And now, my goodness, I couldn't imagine.
So you have always loved the idea of staying close. You didn't have the let me get out of here, I'm going to go live somewhere else.
Yeah, for some reason, I never had that great desire. I was comfortable and happy in the Duval in the Valley. And I even now jokingly tell people that I don't go out of the Valley. I stay in the Valley. If I can't buy it in Duval, I don't need it.
Yeah. Now you can order it on Amazon.
Yeah. And my wife's really into computers and stuff. I'm not, but she's,
she likes it.
Amazon boxes are always coming to our house.
And she prefers that to shopping, to going, driving.
And chewy boxes, those from the dog.
Oh, yes, yes. So he gets his food in the mail.
And when we lived in Duval in the early 70s, I ran for city council.
Did you?
Elected to the town council. And at that time, Irv Harder was the mayor.
Who?
Irv Harder. He was Dave Harder's brother.
Irv Harder.
Yeah.
B-R-E-W?
I believe so.
Was his first name.
Yeah.
And Harder, H-A-R-D-E-R,
yeah,
was his last name.
He actually had a lumber yard. Duval. The buildings, right, as you come across the bridge, the Windville Duval.
Yeah.
The buildings across the street, just on the left, just a little bit. I think there's a winery or something in there now, and a preschool or something. But that was all his lumber yard.
Out on the Cherry Valley Road?
No, right here. Just as you just come across the bridge.
Oh.
And the little market is on, a little bit on the right, but just a little bit on the left. Right across the street, it was maybe painted brown right now. But that was there's like three buildings right in the middle.
Okay.
And that was Duval Wholesale Lumber, I think it was called.
So he was the mayor.
Right.
How was that for you, being on the city council?
Well, it was good, but he gave me a real insight and maybe patience for elected officials, because it at times was a real pain in the neck. And that, in those days, Duval had no paved streets. All the side streets are gravel. And people would call me up and say, hey, there's a pothole in the street in front of my house. What
the
are you gonna
size
do
of
about
a Volkswagen,
it?
Yeah.
Well, some of them weren't even, but they said, what are you going to do about it? Well, I can talk to the maintenance man. And the other thing, I was supposed to be, Duval at that time contracted with the county sheriff for police protection.
Yes, yeah.
But they only came out here like maybe once a week and would drive around and then leave.
I heard about this from Becky Nixon, how the police got here.
So it, I have people, again, would call me up, hey, my neighbor's dog barking. What are you going to do about it?
The neighbor's what?
Dog is barking. I want you to call the sheriff's department. Have him come out here and do something about his dog. So like I say, I learned appreciation for the patience for elected officials. I understand what we all have.
How many years were you on the council?
Only 2 years.
Okay.
In fact, that was then when Leslie and I built her house up in Mountain View, and some people jokingly say I built a house and moved out of town so I couldn't be on the council.
Yeah, I don't live in Duval anymore in town.
But in those days too, the town just had one maintenance man, and he had one old dump truck, and
there were a lot of problems in growing.
Yeah, but he could only do so much.
So what kinds of changes were you seeing as you grew up and as you worked over the years, 41 years at this company, and you've been in the perfect place to observe and kind of analyze and talk to people and understand the changes going on. What would be some of your reflections on that?
Well, one thing, one of the biggest impacts on the town of Duval was when we put in the sewer system.
Okay.
And once the sewer system was put in, then previous to that, you had to have a 100-by-100 lot to put a septic tank on. Well, once the sewer system came in, you could go to a much smaller lot. So the big building boom started taking place. And lots of people moving in the town who had, have different ideas and different expectations of what, So in a lot of ways, I think the attitude of the town has changed. It's definitely not the farming good old boy community that it was back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
There was farmers and loggers, and that was a big, mm-hmm. you know, every other truck I went to, Duval was a warehouse or logging truck, and,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that, I still like mm-hmm. to tell people, when I volunteer at the visitor center, I tell people that even though Duval is growing immensely, it's still, especially on Main Street, has that small town feel. And small
on purpose, too. Didn't they maintain
yeah.
that?
And people want to retain that, and hopefully they can. I hear, different stories and things, but, I talked to one gal who had the visitor center. She had lived up by by the high school, she said, for 3 years, and had never gone down on Main Street and visited the shops. She'd go up the road by the Big Rock Road up to the next street and take her over to her house, and that's the way she'd go to work there by the Safeway. And she never came into Main Street and walked around and visited. And so, I guess that's the thing is, the attitude and the thinking of most or a lot of people still care greatly about the town, mm-hmm. but it has changed. You know, it's not
so much.
Like I say, I like Duval. I've been here all my life, and I can't. There's no place that I can really imagine that I'd rather live to. My wife and I have traveled around different places and seen other towns, and I think. I wouldn't really want to live here because certain reasons, and Duval's got whatever I need.
Yes.
And our weather isn't too bad. My brother-in-law lived in this great little town in northern Idaho. Really a nice little town. But holy cow, the winter time, the snow higher than your windows. And I think he has to shovel his sidewalk or his driveway every day because the snowplow comes by and throws it over in the driveway and he can't get out. And I think, that's not for me. So
it's become a bit more of a bedroom town.
Yeah.
With a lot of people work at home too with the electronic commuting.
Right. I think, what's Bill Gates's
Microsoft?
Microsoft, yeah. We have a lot of people who work
sure.
for Microsoft.
Yeah.
And some of them are from out of the country. And
you bet. There's a big change coming on, demographics.
Yeah. So it, but still, I think the majority of them appreciate them. There's some of them, I'm sure, maybe even a lot of them, would really rather be living in Bellevue or Mercer Island, but they can't afford it.
Can't afford it.
So they can't.
But I think there's people love it here too. I mean, I have many. My neighbors are from India, and they love the quiet, like I do, and the beauty. And there's a sense, I think, of many that a place to raise a family, the kids, the schools, and just being able to kids run around the neighborhood. That doesn't happen.
And still, you look out here on the view we got here. When you come to Duval, you have to go through a green belt, sort of.
You do.
Whether you come across 124th or Wendell.
And that will be protected, I understand, in the planning.
So in a way, Duval is kind of like an island. And,
yes.
And like you said, a lot of people appreciate the fact that they can look out and see a view. Like
and
that.
I know that when they build homes, they squish them. But that's to protect this, too.
And of course, these houses right here on the corner, see, it almost makes me want to throw up.
I know.
But
at least they're not each have 5 acres
and
taking over the,
And, of course, one of the disadvantages is most of these places, there's two cars.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basically driving on the same roads that we had in the 1950s.
The traffic and the community traffic, the quality of the roads, huge problems.
I hear some real, I've been retired for 10 years, so
okay.
I don't go over Novelty Hill anymore.
But
I hear some stories now about in the mornings that traffic is just so bad.
Yeah, time to get out, yeah.
And I actually would start work at 6 in the morning, so I was, even in those days, I was before any mm-hmm. traffic. But, yeah, people would tell me.
So, tell me about your family. Where did you meet Leslie?
Well, Leslie moved out here, her family moved out here to Duval when she was about... I think a sophomore in high school.
What's her maiden name?
Holson. They are no longer, none of them are in the community. They lived here for
just
a few years.
Holson. H-A-L-S-O-N?
What's that?
H-A-L-S-O-N?
H-A-L-L.
Oh, two L's.
That's a... We're right across from the Winville-Duval Bridge, mm-hmm. where the little market is now.
Mm-hmm.
But there used to be a little red restaurant building. It sat mm-hmm. right up to the sidewalk. And it was always known as Lucy's Restaurant. And I think the real name of it was Bridgeview or something like that. But Lucy owned it, so everybody called it Lucy's Restaurant. Well, my wife Leslie got a job there, and cooking and working on the table and stuff. And me and some of my friends, we'd always, that was go to a coffee shop and stuff. And that's where I met her. And I jokingly tell people that she was a good cook, and I thought, I better marry her.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
But that was where we met.
Yeah, and you're about the same age. And
Then which her last year in high school we dated, and then we were both pretty young when we did get married. And we bought this
How
house.
Young?
Well, let's see, I think she was 19 and I was 21.
Mm-hmm. And but you've been married how long?
51 years.
Great, congratulations.
And we have two sons.
All right.
Eric and Rob. Eric lives in Edmonds, and he has our two grandchildren, a boy and a girl. And then Rob is the younger one. He lives out the Cherry Valley Road and is a mechanic in Redmond.
Wow. So he lives around.
Yeah. But he's single. He's, but so our grandkids are in Edmonds, which is not too far away.
No, not at all. It's lovely.
You know, I have to talk to people. My grandkids are in Ireland or something. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
And both my boys went to school here in the
okay.
this community. But when the youngest one, he's 8 years younger than the older one, and he was in high school. They changed the built the present high school, Cedar Crest.
Yeah, yeah.
And changed the high school from Carnation. That became the middle school then.
Yeah.
And so he actually, my younger one graduated from Cedar Crest, and the older boy graduated from Tolt High School.
Was it called Tolt when you went there?
Yeah.
Or was it called Carnation?
No, it was Tolt High School.
Larry Pickering was telling me how, you know, they related to that area, that end of town, but you know them. And
yes, in fact, I went to school with Larry.
Yeah, and the name of the town and everything, it went back and forth.
Yeah, a number of times it's gone back and forth. And I heard not too long ago there was another talk about changing it back to Tolt.
Yeah.
Of course, it's funny how that.
Yeah.
But let's see where my thought was going.
You were telling me about your boys being 8 years apart and going to school.
Well, back in the school business, prior to, I think it was 1940, Duval had a high school. It was a building that sat behind this building.
Okay.
And that was the Duval High School. And in 1940, around that time anyway, they consolidated a whole number of little districts. In fact, there was a, up on the Mountain View Road, there was a one-room school up there, and there was one down at Vincent. And, so they consolidated them all and became the District 407, which was called the Lower Snoqualmie District in those days, and took the high school from here and took it to Carnation to merge with that high school. You know, there was a lot of people in Duval who really, really hated them. In fact, some people were so upset about it that they would not send their kids to high school in Carnation. They sent them to Monroe. And, but that's in a different county. And so out where the county line is, Monroe would send a bus to the county line. To the county line. And the people here would take their high school students down there.
We're interviewing. We're taping.
We're almost done.
I see what it is. Thanks.
So some of the, like I say, some of the, they would haul their, take their kids down to the county line, and then the bus from Monroe would pick them up, take them to high school. And there were some very bitter feelings about it.
I think Roney drove himself up there.
Well, I'm sure a lot of the older high school.
Yeah. You know.
But then, Janet, we had the opposite happen. When they built Cedar Crest High School, and they were going to close high school in Carnation. Because towns get the spirit of the high school.
Yeah, it means everything.
There's a lot of people in Carnation were really upset because of the move to high school.
And we grew more than they did then.
Yeah.
And we had the sewer. And they just got it, right?
Yeah, but like I say, some pretty bitter feelings over moving.
Yeah, isn't that something? It's interesting. That's human nature and community nature.
You know, little town, little communities get, you know, high school spirit.
School is everything.
It means a lot to
you.
Them.
Go to the games.
Yeah.
I grew up in that.
Where did you go?
Iowa.
Oh.
A town of only 2,000 in North Central, and then a town of about 12,000 in Central East.
So you know about, understand the small town spirit and feeling. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, everything was the sports, too. It still is. So, looking back, what are your thoughts on Duval now? And your hopes and your fears and your worries?
Well, I actually feel that Duval now is better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
We have some great businesses in town. I think we got one of the best hardware stores there is.
Mm-hmm.
We got two good grocery stores. I jokingly tell people if I can't get it in Duval, I don't need it. But but you can. You can get most everything you need in Duval.
Yeah, or Monroe.
Yeah, and we still have that. Great small town friendliness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I always go down to CNC Coffee. You know,
CNC.
Yes.
Where is that?
Well, do you know where Country Collections is?
Yeah. Oh, CC's.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where you get your coffee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And I always visit with people come in.
It's just a good place to park yourself to see what's going on.
Right. And I see people, you know, I haven't seen for a long time. And the other thing is, I go to the store, Country Collections, and we'll be visiting with them, and people come in, and I'll ask them, you know, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, in fact, last Monday I met a couple from Federal Way.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in this great conversation standing there in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And we had both of us, when our kids were little, they'd take them over to Lake Wenatchee to go camping.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Mason Creek and Leavenworth and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
so
close.
We had this really great conversation.
Mm-hmm.
People, if you were in Target or something, you would never even said hi to them.
Mm-hmm. So it's still keeping that friendliness.
Right. And that's what I'd like. I think it's even more in a lot of ways in Duval now than it used to be, and I hope it can continue. I hope it doesn't get too big for its britches, sort of speaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking that it's...
how can we keep that?
I don't know.
The friendliness?
Yeah.
And yet, when people move here, they're kind of looking for something more connection, yeah. I think.
But then, see, like you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, of course, I made a big point of it. Yeah. But I have all over. I'm doing lots of different things. But there are other people. Look at Nicole, who just joined our board. She just moved here. And she's on the board, or she's a volunteer. And those other... Lynn and Matthew just moved, and the gal last night, Taylor. Isn't that wonderful? And this guy, he just moved here, but he wants to be involved, and these people all wanted to be involved in something. And luckily, they love history.
Right. So, yeah, I really like seeing the younger people getting involved in that.
Isn't that great?
Sort of thing,
you know? So there's hope.
See, of course, I can remember when Historic Society, it was like Ray Burns and Ralph Taylor and those guys who started it and held it together, you know. They were such great guys. I used to talk to Ralph Taylor, and he'd tell me different stories about things. And he had lived in Duval and moved away, and then he'd come back after he retired. And Ray, I can remember when Ray had the mill and Duval, where the trailer park is, and his old lumber mill, he sawed logs. And as a kid, I'd go down there and sit down there and watch him working. I feel real fortunate. I knew those people. I got to visit with them and meet them. And what I can share about them, I like to share with people. Inside, personally, I'm glad I got to know him.
Yeah, you knew Leo Doherty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you knew the people downtown, yeah. Hill, and, you know.
The Doherty's a little side story here. A lot of people don't know it. They were real frugal. Probably there again, they grew up in this Depression area.
Sure, absolutely.
But Leo would go down to the Goodwill in Seattle and buy shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. All he was worried about was that they were the right size. It didn't matter if they were one brown one or one white one. So he'd
That's
wear these
great.
Mismatch.
And what was his mom like? Yeah, what was Kate? What kind of frugality must she have had to raise those kids?
See, of course, she was long gone before. She passed away in 1935.
But so was she taught them?
She must have been such a strong-willed woman.
Those values,
To keep the family together, keep the farm together, have those loggers out there.
Yeah,
the
to feed them.
And on a hot day like today, you had that stove going. And she probably had that stove going since 3 in the morning.
Doing pies and breads and roast.
And when those loggers came in for dinner...
Baked beans.
They fed the loggers. They actually ate in this end of the bunkhouse. But she made the food here.
Yeah.
And they didn't want a little green salad.
No.
You know, they wanted potatoes.
And you see the menu out there. It's good.
Her two girls, of course, I'm sure helped her, but she had the just, boy, things, kids towed the line.
She must have.
I bet she didn't waste anything.
Yep.
And on top of that, you know, she, out here, just that direction of the bunkhouse, had a huge garden. And so you canned the stuff because...
Yep. Always working.
That's what got you through the winter. Was.
Yeah, that's what you ate.
Yeah, you didn't go down to the grocery store and pick up some fresh tomatoes.
It wasn't.
That's why I say to Leslie, we're sitting at our table. We have a big garden too.
Yeah, you can your tomatoes.
And February, we got fresh lettuce.
Yeah.
Fresh tomatoes. I think we're so spoiled.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't look so good.
Yeah.
We'll go down and get another one.
Yeah.
Another one. And it's fresh.
Yeah, but you also eat from your garden, too.
Mostly in our garden, I think mostly we do it because I think it's good for a person's soul to grow something.
I do, too. It's a waste not to.
And
you
get your hands in the dirt. In fact, we actually have two gardens. One is up closer to the house, has smaller things like carrots and peas and beans. And then I have a pretty good-sized one in my one field. And I grow sunflowers and corn and pumpkins.
Squashes. And
mostly things that the deer don't bother.
Oh.
Because up there we have quite a deer problem. In fact, we had such a deer problem on our smaller garden. Leslie found on the internet a motion detection sprinkler.
Ah!
And it works off a 9-volt battery, but you have to have a garden hose hooked up.
Yeah,
in the water.
That's how it works.
And it catches a motion, and it comes on and goes twice, and
that
shuts off. But it also makes that sprinkler noise.
Yeah,
you know,
they don't like it.
And since we've been having that, we haven't had any deer. Because the deer would get in the garden in one night. Rabbits and those things. One night, they'd wipe out the whole garden.
Yep.
We spend a couple months growing things, and then our deer would go there.
And they say, thank you.
Shoot Bambi.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of deer up there. In fact, right now we get to see in our field a doe with two little fawns. I love watching them.
Well, Tom, we should finish up, but I like to ask people as a closing line to what advice would you give to somebody just moving here to Duval?
What advice? I've never been one much for giving advice. I guess my advice would be to try and become part of the community, to try and change the community.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, boy, this went a lot faster. Flew by.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I'd have trouble talking about things.
Well, and thank you, Tom. You? Thank you. I am honored to know you. The same. Yeah, I'm going to shut this, and then I'm going to ask you something else. Doo.